Alrighty, you are still tuned in to Generational Blust on Women Radio with your girl Steady G. And we still have Refilwe Sesane from 1828 with us. So Refilwe, what challenges would you say you faced as a young woman in your education, and how did you overcome them?
I think not having a sense of direction was the biggest challenge.
Okay.
Because I left matric at 18,
knowing
that I would have to get a degree, because in my family, there was no other alternative.
Yes.
It was just standard and expected that you would go to university.
True.
But I didn't know what it was that I was going to study. And I'd always loved drama and public speaking and English and doing, you know, debating and taking part in a lot of those cultural activities, but not really certain that that would be a career for me to take, that I would study further in terms of English or BA in dramatic arts, for instance. So I really chopped and changed in terms of my modules at Varsity, and that took a lot of time. And then there was also just the challenge of funding and the funding constraints. Just navigating campus life, I found very difficult. But if you don't have that sense of mentorship, that sense of direction, it really compounds a lot of issues. So I think that was a big part of the reason why I set up 1828, is I didn't want to see other girls and young women going through what I went through, struggling to get funding, struggling with self-esteem, not having any mentorship. And I just said, well, if I could just help one girl not go through what I went through, then I would have done my job. And little did I know that it would become an entire organization, and we'd be sitting here 14 years later working with so many wonderful young women and really being co-creators in the vision that they're crafting for themselves. It's not easy to share challenges. It takes a lot of courage. But I think when we are honest about our experiences and we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, there's a lot of lessons that can be gained.
Yeah.
And the most important thing is making sure that someone else doesn't go through it.
True.
I think that for me was really key.
Sure. That is the winner. What would you say has been like your proudest moment since like the inception of 1828?
It's actually a page on our website called Our Graduates. That literally has to be my favorite page. And you can see all of the girls' stories, all of their journeys with 1828, their backgrounds, and how we've made a difference in their lives through the mentorship and through the financial assistance program. I'm really proud of what it is the girls have gone on to do after graduating. And I'm really proud that they are ambassadors of 1828 and they're spreading the word about 1828 and encouraging other girls to come on board and apply and really getting us out there, because we've done so much for them and they've been such a big part of our own success that it makes it easier for us to fundraise when we say, well, look at all the graduates that we've produced in the past and these girls' performance makes it easy for us to sit with a donor and say, please substantiate giving more money to these girls and please substantiate giving more access to opportunity to them. It's literally my proudest moment. And for us, we're just honored to be the co-creators in the lives that they're crafting for themselves.
Yeah, that is beautiful. I think I'm going to go onto your website and check out this.
You're like a bunch of testimonials. I guarantee you, you'll love that graduates page.
Sure. Sounds very good. So before we let you go, what are the pearls of wisdom that you'd love to leave for our listeners at home? And also, if you are on the socials, you can tell our listeners where they can find you as 1828.
Yeah. I want to share two pearls of wisdom.
Okay.
And the first is from a book that I read from Uncle Rush, Russell Simmons. And he said three things. He said, get clear on your vision.
Okay.
Freeze your vision. Share your vision.
So get clear on your vision, freeze it, and share it. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Because that is going to concretize a lot of the things that you're going to do going forward. If you can articulate what your vision is, like I want 1, 2, 3, 4 in ABCD, and you fix that and you share that, because again, one is too small a number for greatness. You need other people. You need people who are invested in your success and bringing that vision to life. So that would be pearl of wisdom number one. And the second one that I would mention is from a woman that I was mentored by years ago. And she said three things too. I think I have a passion for the number three this evening. But what she said was, as a leader, you cannot expect anyone to do something that you cannot do, that you are not willing to do, and that you have not done. So she says, if you can't do something, it's because of a lack of skill or competence. If you don't want to do something, it's because of a lack of willingness. Mm. If you've never done something, it means you lack experience. And what she said was, a leader can only expect other people to do what they can do, what they are willing to do, and what they have done. And that really stuck with me, because if we think about being active citizens, and if we think about leadership as service, necessarily when you've gone through some experience, it makes it then easier for you as a leader to tell someone how to do it and to teach them and show them the way. So I think that's the most important one that I would leave with the listeners for tonight. And on social media, we are at 1828. Our website is 1828.co.za, the number one, the number eight, the number two, the number 8.co.za, and that's 1828. And thank you so much for this, Gugu and Poet. It was really lovely being on the show with you this evening.
Thank you so much giving us your time.
I just have to reiterate how inspired I feel right now. Like, I'm even lost for words.
You feel like you're on a journey 1828 and do something in there, right? Yes. I think I will challenge myself to be part of the Big Sisters network.
Oh, we'd love to have you. Thank you so much.
If there's any way that I can support as well,
Thanks, ladies. That's really wonderful. We'd appreciate all the support that we get. And, you know, being a nonprofit, we're constantly fundraising. So any amount of money, any sort of support that we can get through the mentorship, through the facilitation, we gladly welcome.
Sure. No, thank you. And please do continue doing the great work. And yeah, may God continue to bless you and your pockets so that you can reach more, more communities and more girls.
Thank you very much. And to the listeners as well, we really appreciate the support, and we hope you have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you, Rufile. You also enjoy the rest of your evening and weekend.
All right. Before we go, I think the whole team, I'm speaking on behalf of the whole team at Women Radio, that we are all on board for us, because we have Coach Bobby.
Yes.
We have so many like mentors as well. So I'm pretty sure we can try.
So we might all just go and join the Big Sisters network.
Oh, wonderful.
Hold us to it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's really amazing.
That's good. That's good.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies. Chat to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome back, y'all. You are still tuned in to Women Radio, Well Organized Man, for we are on Generational Blast. And as promised, in our second segment, we have our beautiful Rufile Sesane from 1828. So Rufile Sesane is the founder of 1828. She attended St. Dominic's Convent in Boksburg from grade 1 to 12 and held several leadership positions throughout her schooling, which she completed with distinctions in English and full colors for both drama and public speaking. Rufile majored in economics and finance in her BCom degree at the University of South Africa, also known as UNISA, and graduated with distinction in economics before completing her honors in BCom at UNISA still. She was the top graduate in the Management Advancement Program at WITS Business School, and she holds a postgraduate certificate in financial economics from Cardiff University in Wales. Rufile has also completed the Being a Director program at the Institute of Directors of South Africa and was an auditor for the Economics of Education course at Stellenbosch. So yeah, she's got a whole lot under her belt. And she also, she was chairing the Carl and Emily Fisher's Foundation in 2019. The adjudication panel, and she's also being an ordinary member of the Golden Key International Honor Society. Whoa! Hello, Rufile. Welcome to Women Radio. Girl, I couldn't go through everything because I'm like, It's a lot that you've achieved in your life. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Gugu. Hello to you and to the listeners. That was quite an intro.
Yeah,
Thank you very much for that.
It was. And to think that I didn't even go through everything, girl, I was like, let's give other children a chance. Yes?
Thank you so much. I'm really quite flattered. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. So you're with me, and I have Mpo also in the studio joining us today.
Hello.
So,
hi.
Hello. Yeah, Mpo, when I mentioned St. Dominic's, you flinched. Do you know her?
No, because I went to St. Dominican Convent, but I always get myself confused to think that I went to St. Dominic's because that rolls off the tongue better. But mine was, I think it was somewhere close, Belgravia. Mine was in Belgravia.
Oh, okay, yeah. I see.
So I thought we went to the same school. I was going to be like, I
was like, okay, small world. Alrighty. Okay, Rufi Lewis, so... tell us just a bit about 1828. What is it? What do you guys do?
With pleasure, Gugu. Mm-hmm. So this is one of my favorite topics. I love talking about 1828.
Yes.
So if you feel that I'm getting carried away, just rein me in and tell me to just slow down, slow my roll.
I sure will. Yeah.
So 1828 is a nonprofit organization mm-hmm. that we established 14 years ago.
Okay.
We started in January 2011, and the mandate really for us is to make higher education mm-hmm. accessible to young women mm-hmm. between the ages of 18 and 28. And how we do that is through four programs.
Okay.
We begin with the life skills workshops,
mm-hmm.
which we do across Gauteng in your township schools, marginalized areas.
Mm.
And we focus really on the life skills lesson where we go into the school,
mm-hmm.
we take a look at the curriculum, and we design content that aligns with the LO curriculum to make sure that the girls are starting to think about what they're going to do post grade 12.
Yes.
We work specifically with the head of life orientation and the teachers in grade 11 and 12
mm.
to get a sense of some of the topics that are relevant to the young women, but also because these girls are coming from homes and communities that are characterized by a lack of academic role models and mentors.
Mm.
We then want to improve their sense of identity
mm-hmm.
by making sure that they're attending university open days mm. and that they are seeing a different world from what they're exposed to.
Mm.
So the life skills workshops are the only intervention that we run at high school level.
Okay.
The rest of our programs focus on girls who are in higher education.
Mm.
And the second program is the financial assistance program,
okay.
where we basically fundraise locally and internationally to pay for tuition fees, laptops,
mm.
textbooks, stationery, as well as a living allowance.
Okay.
And we're not prescriptive in terms of what the girls study.
Mm.
We want the young women to self-select. And we have graduates in a number of different areas. If you visit our site and look at all the graduates we've funded over the years,
mm.
you'll see girls who've done law and graphic okay. designing and sociology. And this is really just around our mandate to make mm. sure that we are producing women leaders in a number of different sectors across the country
mm.
and not only focusing on one specific degree or study discipline.
Yeah.
Then we have a mentorship program called the Big Sister Network,
mm-hmm.
and we basically match the beneficiaries of our financial assistance program to a big sister who gives them psychosocial support,
mm-hmm.
who gives them exposure in terms of the world of work, really just to be the bridge between what I'm studying at varsity
mm.
and what I aspire to do once I have got my degree. And the big sister, someone who's gone through that journey,
mm.
someone who'll be empathetic and will provide that mentorship, that guidance
right.
and support. And then our final program is the leadership camp,
mm-hmm.
where we go away for a weekend with the girls at varsities mm-hmm. across the country,
mm-hmm.
really unpacking the topic of leadership and making sure that they understand leadership from an Ubuntu values base
yeah.
and to not associate leadership with title.
Mm.
Leadership is not about title, and we want to make sure that they unlock the power and agency that they have as young women and really make sure that the sisterhood is formed of young women leaders who will be competent to take this country forward. So it's a bit of a big nutshell. Sorry about that, but this is what 1828 is about. In a nutshell,
yeah.
our organization is about empowering young women
sure.
using higher education as a tool for that empowerment. And they are all between the ages of 18 and 28. And
right.
that's why we're called 1828.
Oh, nice. I see where it comes from now. So as 1828, what role would you say education plays in empowering young women?
So because education is a human right, I link it specifically to self-determination. Mm-hmm. And this is all around just having free choice and acting without external compulsion. And for me, the role that is played really is around breaking the cycles of poverty. Mm. It's around dismantling all of those restrictions that were imposed by apartheid. And if you can use that agency and create empowerment for yourself through education, there'll be a lot of ripple effects and positivity that will come as a result of that.
Yeah, I know that. That is true. You know, you spoke about poverty and breaking those poverty lines. So how do you think access to education can change the trajectory of these young women's life?
So let's not look at education from a formal perspective only in terms of going to college or varsity or a university of technology. Learning is about, first of all, learning from those who are more experienced than you. It can really just be getting stories handed down to you, lessons of people who've gone ahead. It's also just around your own personal desire to know more. So the books that you're reading, the videos that you're watching on YouTube, are they entertaining? Are they informative? Because there's a lot of learning that you can get from social media and videos. And I think that when we think about what it does to a young woman's life in that trajectory, I've already mentioned the sense of free will, but it definitely expands the range of choice and you have more options as an educated woman. There's also a lot of positive outcomes linked to your career progression. And when you are in a learning environment with fellow peers, that also builds your networks. You get a lot of social capital and a lot of people with whom you can grow with, whether you're going into business or furthering your studies. So there's a lot of many different things that could change, but mainly education really improves your earning potential and you are more likely to earn more as an educated woman than one who's not.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love what you just said about like education, right? Not just viewing it as this one traditional thing. There's so many platforms where people can learn from and educate themselves, right? So, do you want to ask something?
I just had a quick question about like, obviously you're currently focusing on girls and women who are going to university or like higher education. Do you also then offer them support, like, after graduating and getting their final degrees and stuff like that, in terms of maybe they're confused about workplaces? Also, I guess now with South Africa being, like, one of the world's hotspots for remote working, do you also support them in, like, expanding that sort of narrative for them?
The main sense of support and exposure comes from the big sister networks. So I mentioned their roles as mentors and how they are given exposure to a number of different careers and what they're going to do in terms of their degrees, applying that knowledge in a practical sense. Their donors who fund the girls also have a lot of opportunities in terms of their own entry-level jobs, in terms of learnerships, in terms of graduate programs. So we certainly keep in touch with all of our beneficiaries once they graduate. Most of them actually prefer to study further and they then do their master's, their honors. We actually have a PhD candidate who's going to be graduating this year. And I think certainly the more they educate themselves, the better their chances are to earn and work money and, you know, earn. But the main thing is that we certainly do provide that support to them, and we're certainly helping them in terms of preparing for job interviews, making sure that their CVs are properly constructed and submitted to people who can help them.
Amazing.
Sure, that is so...
Yeah, it's like, actually so inspiring.
I know, right?
Oh, thank you.
Sure. Like, I don't think you realize what you're doing, Rufilo, out there. Or maybe you do, obviously, from the testimonies of the young women that you've worked with. But this is quite impressive stuff, you know?
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I have a comment here from Mapula Kataka. She says, I love this woman so much. She is so right. What you consume matters.
She's the reason that I'm actually on tonight's show, Gugu. So yes, shout out to Mapula. Thank you for listening. I told her that I would be on air this evening. Yeah. And I'm really glad that she tuned in because she's the one who referred me to you.
Yeah.
And I'm really so happy. Hi, Mapula. Shout out. And thank you.
Thank you so much. You are still tuned in to Generational Blast on Women Radio. Well, again, nice man for we are. If you want to connect with us in studio or are a guest, please do feel free to drop us your voice notes or text on our WhatsApp line, which is 084-092-9990. And for international engagements, it is +27 84-092-9990. And you can find us at Women Radio SA on all social media platforms. Stay tuned. We will be right back, y'all. You are still tuned in to Generational Blust on Women Radio, Well Organized Man, for we are. It is your girl, Steady G, and I am with Mpo and Rifilwe Sasane from 1828. Welcome back, Rifilwe. Okay. All right. So, Rifilwe, are you still there?
I am still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Now I'm happy. We just played you and people at home, Nomfundo Moore, Soft Life. I think that's something everybody wants, hey? We all want that opportunity to be Soft Life. But that's the thing. Soft Life is a chanzelo, actually.
This is the thing.
This is the thing. Right? Yes. Okay, so Rifilwe, why would you say it's important to focus specifically on like a young woman empowerment?
I think we need to start with the historical context, Hugo, and just understand how we got to be where we are. Because if we don't appreciate our history, we won't fully appreciate how we can dismantle a lot of the restrictions that were imposed on women as a result. And if you look back in South Africa, well, in most countries, women were considered second-class citizens. True. You couldn't sign a contract without your husband's consent. Certain key decisions had to be made by your father, and in some instances, your son. And when the women of 1956 marched for their rights, it wasn't just about political representation and being given the vote. It was just in response to a lot of the social issues that women in South Africa were facing. So when we talk about the education of girls, it's meant to level out the playing field and create a more equitable country. And gender equality is one of the key reasons why it makes sense for us to focus on women, because of the history and the legacy issues that we have inherited.
Sure, no, that's quite key. I'm sure you've also experienced some backlash maybe from like men, right? Who are on some, why is it always women, you know, and why not take a boy child to work or why not do such an initiative? What is your answer to them? Do you also answer them with this historical sentiment, or how do you filter that out?
So, oddly, we haven't really had such responses from the men that we've worked with. I think a lot of them are feminists, and they understand women's issues, and they've been quite supportive.
Oh, wow.
What we wanted to do was establish a boys and men forum, and we have a page on our website where really the thinking for us was to make sure that we're not leaving the boys behind, because we understand that perhaps focusing too much on girls and young women could tilt the scales in opposite direction and create of the worst effect in terms of what we wanted to see societally. So we wanted basically the male version of 1828 to help us work with these boys and young men, because you remember our interventions at high school level are not in single sex schools.
Yes.
These are schools that have both girls and boys. And when they get to university, they're not any single sex universities in this country. So they are necessarily interacting with young men in the lecture halls and residences on campus. It wouldn't make sense for us to talk about empowering women without men, because they're 50% of this population.
True.
And some of the issues that we are facing in terms of gender-based violence really have to involve interventions and solutions where men are involved. So I'm quite encouraged by organizations like What About the Boys, because they really saw a need to mentor them and make sure that they're getting the right exposure and making the right decisions. We just don't want to spread ourselves too thin, but also we don't want to dilute the equity of the brand 1828, because we work with girls and young women, and we want to make sure that whatever we're passing on and partnering in terms of men, it will be done by people who have gone through some of the issues that boys are facing and who would be in a much better position than we would be to help them make that transition and make proper life choices and good decisions, using education once again as the bedrock for them to develop.
No, that is beautiful. Let's just quickly pay the bills and we will be right back. Welcome back, y'all. You are still tuned in to Generational Blast on Women Radio, well-organized man for we are. There's actually a comment here from Uput Begi saying, loving what she said. She just said about involving us too. Thank you. Us obviously being the man and the young men, not leaving them behind. So, yeah. You are getting support from people.
I'm glad to hear that. And it sounds like Biggie is also a feminist, like some of the big brothers we have at 1828. So big ups to Biggie and all the male feminists who are listening.
Yeah, thank you. We thank them too. So, Rufile, would you say there are some like global policies that are involved when it comes to promoting girls' education? And if so, what are they and how effective are they?
So we need to look at this really from the legislative background. Mm. And the landscape that dictates a lot of policy is going to be informed by what is happening in terms of our courts, in terms of acts that are passed. Mm-hmm. So yes, there are a few policies that are mentioned globally, but I want to just focus specifically on what I think would be most effective in South Africa, and that mm-hmm. would be financial incentives. Okay. A number of countries around the world have got what we call conditional cash transfers. Okay. And it basically means that a family receives a stipend or a small allowance on condition that their daughters are in school. Okay. And if you keep your daughters in school and have more than one daughter in school, the amount that you get in terms of that conditional cash transfer increases. Mm. That would be a major policy incentive and a big financial incentive for people who are coming from environments where they cannot afford to send their girls to schools or the fees are really outside of the family's reach. Then there's a lot of sense in terms of community engagement and awareness campaigns, because policies around that would certainly make sense to help girls feel safe in schools, to help girls being able to access schools and not having barriers like transport issues or long distances between schools to get to where they're going to. I'm not quite sure what is happening in terms of scholar transport, because we've seen in the news a lot of issues in terms of kids not being able to get to school and issues in terms of the safety and conditions of the vehicles that they're using to transport the learners. I'd also mention a policy around the school feeding schemes, where if the kids are coming from homes where there isn't enough food, it's very difficult for them to concentrate in class, and you can't teach a hungry child.
True.
So necessarily things like having vegetable gardens where the schools are growing food for the children, and we have dedicated staff to prepare those meals and give those kids one meal a day at school, it certainly goes a long way if they're going home, you know, on an empty stomach, or coming to school on an empty stomach and they have no other ways of accessing meals. So I'm going to mention policies around financial incentives, as I said, the conditional cash transfers, the awareness, the social campaigns that are really just around community engagement, transport being the major one, and then the school feeding schemes and nutrition programs to feed the learners, because you can't teach a hungry child, as I said.
That is true. So, Rufile, just a quick one. The conditional cash transfer, is it something that's already in place, or it's something that you would want to suggest?
It's something that I would want to suggest, and we're seeing it in other countries.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if our country, you know, given what is happening in terms of social grants, whether there would be another slice of the national budget to allocate something like this to families, but it would certainly make a big difference to the families who want to send their daughters to school but have no means. I don't think it's being done in South Africa. I speak under correction, but it's not something that I've seen us implementing.
Yeah, no, it's something I love it already, you know, because I'm like, when are you pitching it to to Babu President, whichever department you need to go to? We will definitely back you.
I hope so.
On this one. Sure. That is so, yeah, that is very much impressive, right? So how can government like ensure access, right, to education, especially for those girls that are still in rural or marginalized communities? How do you think they can do better?
So in the rural areas, one of the biggest issues that we're facing is just inadequate infrastructure. So you're also dealing with issues of a lack of access to technology, to steady Wi-Fi, perhaps also considerations about teacher training. And when people graduate with a Bachelor of Education degree, they're not really wanting to take a step back in terms of the career and go to an underserved community, because perhaps the earning potential isn't as good as what it would be at a private school in an urban area. Mm. So we need to start thinking around making it attractive for young graduates to want to be teachers and teach in these rural schools. And to understand that we need to also make sure that in rural areas, we have mobile facilities, things like mobile clinics, mobile libraries, where you can actually get to the people where they are, as opposed to having the services outside of their communities where they're having to travel long distances to get to a nurse, to get to a clinic, to get to a doctor. I also would want to mention things like water harvesting, because again, this goes back to just growing food and being able to feed and sustain yourself and grow. You would need to be watering all of those vegetables that you're planting. So water harvesting is something that would be quite key in rural areas where perhaps they have water interruptions and there isn't a steady flow of water, pardon the pun. Then there would be the issue around sanitation in the rural schools. We know about the issues in terms of the pit latrines and some learners losing their lives because of that. Hygiene factors are also very important. And sometimes you have situations where girls are scared to go into the toilets at their schools, perhaps when they're on their period, or they are feeling so cramped and pressed in class that they're not even concentrating because they haven't relieved themselves. And so issues around sanitation become quite key to education, especially in the rural context where they don't have access to flushing toilets and they don't have access to clean water to wash their hands and to make sure that they're disposing of their sanitary in a hygienic fashion. Those are some of the issues that, I would mention. But I think if we address that, if we address water, things through water harvesting, getting purified water, filtered water, transportation, I've already mentioned before, the mobile clinics and the libraries, all of these form part of the broader ecosystem that makes education attractive to young women in the rural areas.
Sure, that is true. Okay, no, you mentioned quite a key point right there about especially the water harvesting part, you know, because I think some people don't really take that too much into accountability or stuff because we feel like, okay, especially when we're not in the rural areas, we don't think water is this precious commodity, you know, whereas like the stuff that you've mentioned already about water harvesting can go such a long way, you know.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned things like when we have like graduate teachers or whatever, how we can probably motivate them to want to go back and teach, right, in these rural underserved communities. So what do you think, or how rather do you think like the curricula at those schools can be redesigned to include topics that will help empower and uplift young women?
So I think a lot of that goes back to the teacher training that I mentioned, because the teacher training programs also need to focus on curricula that are gender sensitive.
Yes.
It's very important that there's gender sensitivity in the curriculum because that would promote equality and empower girls and enhance the educational experience. So for us, a gender sensitive curriculum really goes down to the prescribed textbooks.
Yes.
How are girls and how are women represented in prescribed textbooks? You also look at your study guides and other learning material, and to make sure that we are conscious in terms of the subliminal messages that we're giving to these girls through these books, through these study guides, through all of this learning material. So a curriculum that isn't gender sensitive, I think, is going to take us back as a country, whereas we really need to have teachers who understand the importance of what they're imparting, the importance of how girls are represented in the learning material. And that then speaks to the teacher training and making sure that they are equipped with the tools and the skills that they need to impart to their learners, whether it's a classroom situation, even your lecturers at university level. A lot of gender sensitivity also needs to come into the curriculum and not just be something that we cover when we do a BA in women's studies, for instance.
Sure, that is true. So how do you think cultural norms and expectations like impact girls and their participation in schools or education in general?
So we have a very patriarchal society in South Africa, which is quite saddening. And I think the dominance of men in society in general is something that makes it very difficult for us to progress. As much as we have taken steps in the right direction, we still work with a lot of patriarchy, and there's a lot of these social rules and expectations that are imposed. And all of those play a role in terms of girls seeing themselves positively in terms of their own sense of self and their self-esteem. I think the one thing that would really be beneficial for us is just to break that patriarchy and that cycle of thinking men are better, men are stronger, men are wiser. The reason that we have all of these genders, and not just male and female, I'm talking across the gender spectrum, is because we each have something to learn from one another and we can gain from one another. Mm. And the idea that, oh, the man is the head, or the man is the important one, or the man is the only one who's equipped to make decisions, really need to change, because that informs how girls and young women perceive themselves and how they progress in society.
Exactly. Especially that part of the man being the head, you know. I think they also need to understand that without the neck, the head cannot move.
There we go.
They need to know this, that yes, true, we love and we respect that they're the head, but they can also give us some credit as the neck, right? In helping the movement of those heads. No, that is beautiful. So, Rufila, we are in a digital world, right? We live in a very much digital world of education and all of that. So how can digital tools and online learning be used in empowering women, especially in the underserved areas as well?
I was very encouraged to hear the President's State of the Nation address this year, where he mentioned the website sayouth.mobi. Okay. This is a zero-rated app, and it basically gives job seekers, young graduates, learners, students access to a range of opportunities that they can use without data. Because if we talk about connectivity and making sure that people are getting access to opportunity, we also need to remove the barrier of having to pay for airtime and having to buy data. Yeah. And really, zero rated apps for me, I think, are the future in terms of what it is that people can access. Mm. They also form the foundation for digital literacy. And it's very important that they are getting that access without having to worry about, well, how am I going to pay for this data? A lot of the mobile network providers, Vodacom and ATM, have got some really innovative e-schooling programs that improve access to education and make sure that we are using these online digital tools. But the one that really fired me up was sayouth.mobi, and they've got a zero-rated career portal through Career24 and PNET for those who are looking for a job, because when you don't have a job, looking for a job is a job itself. And so that takes a lot of time and energy and focus, but doing it on the app without having to worry about data costs, I think, is a huge step forward.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Because data...
data is something that I'm still getting used to here. Because I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't... Like, I know that it's there, but in the West, it's so free.
True.
So adjusting here...
You hop
here,
onto
like,
a bus, get free Wi-Fi.
And it is something that I was thinking about, like, when it comes to higher education. Well, actually, just anyone in education right now.
Exactly.
Because a lot of the information that we need is online. And the lack of access, I think that's why South Africa is kind of, I don't want to say backwards, but like we are falling behind in our education system. And it's because of lack of resources like this. So thank you for sharing that, because I did not know that was...
No, it's there. It's really quite an encouraging platform, sayouth.mobi, and they have a number of different icons you can click on. It talks about job opportunities. There's entrepreneurial opportunities for people who want to start their own businesses. There's a range of youth programs and skilling opportunities. And then they also touch on just how to present yourself in terms of work. So they give you interview tips, how to job search, and they've got a toll-free number as well. So that for me is a really, really brilliant platform that very few people are aware of, and this is part of the reason that people don't think anything positive is happening. We're all quick to blame government for not doing this, but when there is something positive that's happening, we also need to acknowledge and celebrate that. And for me, sayouth.mobi really makes a lot of sense.
No, that is it. We'll definitely encourage more youth to hop onto that platform.
Thank you. That'll be really awesome.
So, Rufila, you mentioned what is it called? Sisters?
Your Big Sister Network.
Yes, your Big Sister Network, right?
Yes.
So when we're looking at that for 1828, how would you say seeing these women, right, in leadership roles? Because it could be like from your teachers, your principals, or your CEOs, etc., in whatever space they're in, how do you think they influence the girls' ambitions?
It comes down to relatability, because you see someone who looks like you, who's from the same community as you, who's already doing something that you aspire to do. So it's extremely relatable, and it also just makes it tangible and concrete that, oh, if Google can do it, I can do it too. And then Google must teach me, you know, how to do it and how I can follow in her footsteps to become more like her. I think when we start to think of mentorship as role modeling, as also just a guide in terms of how young people are going to progress, and young women in particular, then having women at the forefront in leadership positions as CEOs of blue chip companies, listed companies, women running their own businesses as SMME owners is very important for just the girl's psyche and seeing herself represented in an older woman. So that relatability is really important. And it also gives us the sense that we are not alone as we do this, because there's no such thing as a self-made woman. Right? We're only as successful as people allow us to be. And so creating that network of like-minded women, of hardworking, disciplined women who've got a strong work ethic is something that is hugely inspiring and something that makes it easier to relate to, because you're already seeing someone doing what you want to do and love to do, and they can teach you and hold your hand and guide you.
Yeah, no, that is quite key. That is quite key. So what measures can schools take to support leadership in young girls as well as their mental health, you know, because mental health is quite a big thing now, you know.
So I mentioned when we spoke about the rural areas, the mobile clinics, way back in the day, there used to be nurses who were assigned to schools. And the nurse would actually be stationed at a school. I don't know if it was daily, but perhaps two or three times a day. And you would be able to consult with her privately in terms of whatever issues you're facing. Certainly around the issue of teen pregnancy, which is still quite rife in our country. But also, as you mentioned, around just welfare, because a nurse would be tied in with the social workers and with other departments that would address issues that girls were facing either at home or at school. So when we start to think about building self-confidence, I think the first thing is just to appreciate the sensitivity around some of the issues that girls are facing and to appreciate that, well, if I've already disclosed this and told someone, that person is not then going to spread it and tell other people in the community and disrespect me or undermine the sensitivity of what I'm sharing. We need to create spaces where girls are free to talk about their experiences and who will be supported in a nurturing environment and get the right advice and guidance that they need. So that would be the first place to start, is when we talk about wellness and mental health in general, but also just being a teenager and growing up, there's a lot of hormonal changes, a lot of issues that you're facing. You need to do it in a place where you know is safe and you feel emotionally safe in that space. You're not being compromised in terms of your well-being or in terms of your issue. And the leadership, again, in a schooling context, comes down to who we have leading the school. So the principals, the heads of departments, as well as the school governing bodies, because that also democratizes what happens within the school, is if you have an active SGB and members of the community addressing whatever issues learners are faced with, and not just taking directives from the school's leadership, but also understanding that parents and caregivers and other people who are invested in these girls and young women are also represented through the SGBs and leadership.
Sure. No, that is quite profound. Let us just quickly pay the bills and we'll be right back.